Hello, everyone, and welcome to Compliance Week's News Podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and today we're going to talk about recent changes to fair value accounting rules. On April 2nd, the Financial Accounting Standards Board made two significant changes to how companies can measure fair value of assets when the market for those assets is frozen, which pretty much describes the market these days. Now, the banking industry had lobbied fiercely to get these changes and to help them report fewer losses on non-performing loans that they're carrying on their balance sheets right now. Now, to help us understand exactly what all this means, we're joined by David Sherman. He is an accounting professor at Northeastern University, and he's also author of the FAS 157 Answer Book. And FAS 157 is the accounting standard that spells out how fair value should be measured. So, David, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Matt.
Sure. Now, first question here. FASB's guidance allows companies to split off some of the losses from their bad loans into other comprehensive income and then keep those losses off the income statement. My question, I guess, is how useful will that be to banks, and do you agree with critics who are saying that this is a sort of a side rule to help banks hide some losses they actually should be reporting to investors?
Well, I think that the first thing to say is that our discussion today has a little bit of qualification in that the final words are yet to be published. They're expected any day, but there is a pretty clear sense of what is going to be done, and we'll talk based on that.
Sure.
And I'll also mention that even in the press conference following this the April 2nd meeting, questions were asked, and some of those were not actually answered readily. But directly answering your question, yes, it does allow them to split off some of the losses into other comprehensive income. That's the part that is related to market fluctuations in the value of the loans. In other words, they're separating out market, which has to do with the fact that the market might be illiquid, and therefore we can't get a current price, and therefore may use more of an internal pricing mechanism, like a discounted cash flow, and use that. And they'll separate that from the credit losses. So, for example, if I had made a loan some time ago to a company that had a declining credit rating, such as, let's say, I'm not saying this is exactly the case, but let's say it was a company that we know had some difficulties, like AIG, the credit rating would go down, and therefore the discount rate, the cost of funds for them would go up, and there'd be a loss due to credit, and those losses would go through income. And, of course, this part related to the market is going to go into this other category in other comprehensive income, which is one of the more perplexing, least understood, and possibly least explainable in terms of accounting concepts on the balance sheet. So it will go there, and it will be split, and that's new. Will this really let banks hide some losses? And this is, of course, a very interesting question because this has to do with how well one understands the financial statements. And I think it will not be the kind of thing that will cause one to hide losses. I think some investors don't understand this, might misunderstand because some of the losses that exist due to the market will not show up in the income statement and they might have missed the other comprehensive element. I think a good analyst, a good lender would understand this. I think there are issues where some parts of what affects banks is how much capital they have, and that those capital requirements are not controlled by how Moody's evaluates the bank or how an investor or a security analyst evaluates them. It has to do with some legal requirements about capital reserves, and this will probably allow banks to have a slightly higher capital reserve, but that's a technical question as to how the regulators choose that, and that's actually really a separate issue.
Okay. Now, we have been talking about how useful this is to the banking sector, but for all of the other listeners out there who aren't in the financial sector, don't work at a bank and don't necessarily have all of these sorts of assets on their balance sheet, do these changes really have any usefulness to them, or do they have any impact on what these other industries might be doing?
Not really. There's not too much direct impact, but what has happened is, in this day and age, so many, almost any company that is, you know, global and that has fairly complex, does have some securities or let's say assets, and sometimes even liabilities that are valued at fair value.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be could be things like currency futures, commodity futures, and interest rate swaps to protect their interest costs. So these are things that would have to be valued at fair value, and there will be a pour-over effect that these requirements will affect them to some extent. But I would not think of this as being sort of primary to them. Those organizations do have other assets that have to be valued, that are valued at fair value, things like intangibles, patents, even mm-hmm. goodwill. And those are always, those have been, you know, since in recent years, valued at fair value. But I don't think these changes are really going to impact that. Those are always what they refer to as level three. They're
yep.
always mostly internal valuation. So I don't think that there will be very much impact, except for those cases where they do own some of these assets like derivatives that have to be valued at fair value. And, of course, there are hybrid companies like the General Electrics that have that are really like banks and also entertainment companies. And, of course, the financial part of those organizations and insurance companies will be affected.
Okay. And last question, there has been a lot of press that FASB enacted these changes under political pressure. But on the other hand, FASB had also been saying it wanted to get around to addressing the problem of illiquid markets sooner or later anyways. So I'm guessing, my question is, do you think it's right to say that FASB did cave into political pressure, or was this guidance at odds with what they had been thinking they might eventually do anyways?
I think that the timing and the speed, I don't know, I wouldn't want to use the word cave in. The timing,
yeah.
the speed was a reaction to political pressure. I think mm-hmm. they always understood these issues. There's some ways of looking at what's being done to say these are just refinements. There's an inevitable, unanswerable question. No matter how much guidance they give, and they are going to give a lot more guidance, no one can really say exactly when a market is inactive, illiquid. There's no objective single test for that, and there are instruments out there which many of us have never heard of. I sit down with hedge funds and ask them what issues they have, and they list the investments they have, and I see things like total return swaps. Now I know what they are. I never heard of them in my life. There are many of these, so there's going to be a lot of issues of how you value each of these things in their markets. So number one, they're going to try to provide more guidance, but they can never actually go around and point to say that's illiquid, that is active. So I don't think they caved in. I think they understood these issues all the time. I think they want to stay with the principles-based view. I don't think they want to start creating rules, but they're going to provide a lot more guidance and more examples.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the people on FASB really are really trying to do the right thing. We're not close friends, but I do know those people, and I do really believe they want to do the right thing, and they are trying to do that. And we're at the same time recognizing the fact that there is a hue and cry for more guidance, and that's where I think we are with this.
All right. Well, thank you very much for talking with us, David. We appreciate the time. And again, everybody, that was David Sherman, accounting professor at Northeastern University, talking with us about the recent changes to fair value accounting rules. That's all the time we have this week. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and I hope you tune in again next week.